journey I'm taking because it's to you, God. Please, you know, do what you want with me, but I'm here for you. And like a little baby crying for a mother in a most dangerous place, that's the state I was in. And when finally, after about an hour and a half of walking like that, we reached the border of Turkey and it was closed. There was one soldier with a gun and it was all locked, a big gate and barbed wire and walls. And I guess Greece and Turkey were not friendly at that time. So this no man's land that we crossed, when we finally reached the end, this gatekeeper refused to let us in. And when we begged him and pleaded with him, and you know, he put his gun in our face and said, "Go back, this is closed." But we had nowhere to go, so we just kept begging. And finally, this soldier brought his commanding officer, and he said the same thing: border closed. And again, who else could we cry for except the higher power of God's grace? You know, it's easy to say we believe or don't believe, but when you're in a situation of total helplessness where nobody could really help except God, then we really cry out. And how much I felt his presence when I was crying out for him. And eventually the person saw we weren't going away, so he let us in and he put us in a shack and locked us in this shack, this little hut, and took off all our clothes and took all of our possessions, which wasn't much, and took our passports and left us. It was freezing cold. And we stood there for about another hour, and then he came back and gave us our clothes and our passports and stamped it and welcomed us to Turkey. And then we were in the middle of nowhere, kind of in a deserted wilderness where that border post was. And we just started walking, and we found a little road, and we were walking along that road. And that's kind of what happened to me in the no man's land, in brief summary. But it was a very important transition. And Satya, you are so perceptive and so, you know, so deep in your own search for truth that, you know, you can see subtleties that other people cannot see. And even I'm learning more about that journey through the no man's land just by your sincere inquiry to understand it deeper. But it really was an important transition between West and East, because in a situation like that, it was like I was stripped of everything that I could relate to as far as security. And when I did cross over into the Islamic world of the Middle East, everything was so different, you know, from a social, cultural, and visual way of life. And it, when in one sense, it was very disorienting, but it was like it wasn't disorienting. It was reorienting, because I really had to understand that, to put aside my own prejudices and my own egoistic misconceptions, I need to do that in order to really open my heart to search for the essence of God's grace.
Thank you, Maharaj. That was...
I'm going to give you my pranam, Prabhuji.
My pranams to you, Prakashji.
Thank you. It's a great to hear your experience about the challenges in your life. Same challenge had with Prabhupada when he was in the boat. He he went through a very difficult time. And that time he was able to chant the mantras and he was able to recover from his health problems, which he went through it. And that was also a big challenge in his life, as you had a great challenge in your life. So my point of the view is that today, the science of chanting of mantra, which you explain, how it can be diluted to a negative aspect of the virus and problems of each individual when they are going through it, whether the planetary position on each individual which is being affected. Now, this question, I have been doing a lot of research on this and a lot of discussions I have with the very spiritual leaders, and I was not able to get the answer. And I'm still working on it. So I would like to hear from you that the individual who are affected by the planetary virus and the effect of their problems in life, how can they overcome it? Is it through the Maha Mantra? Is it through some other programs which they have to do? Or they have to go on till their planetary programs are going on or when they change? How would you explain that?
The situation of astrology, astronomy, the influence of the planets is how things are working on this material level. But whatever the influence may be, still we have free will. What we're experiencing today is based on so many circumstances. You know, there's configuration of the astrology, the planets. There's our own karma of action and reaction. There's the nature of interacting with the world that is, you know, there's so many large-scale karmic reactions, not just our own personal, but the accumulative karmas of the world and, you know, the pollutions. So we're dealing with a lot of situations that, in one sense, are beyond us. But in whatever situation there is, we have free will. And how we respond to situations is how we're going to actually move into our future. A simple analogy, at an airport, let us say Heathrow Airport in London, there's flights to so many different parts of the world. And if I get on a flight to Mumbai, then, you know, halfway up in the air, 30,000 feet above the earth, if I say to the pilot and the hostess, I want to go to New York, I have my free will, I want to go to New York, then the airline hostess will say that you had your free will before you got on the plane, but now that you're on this plane, you are destined for London, I mean for Bombay. But at the same time, you have free will what you're going to do on the plane, and you have free will what you're going to do when you get to Bombay. So similarly, there are situations of destiny that are beyond us, but we do have free will to respond. And that's where the beauty of life is. In whatever situation we're in, we have the free will to either accelerate our impiety or accelerate our piety. We have a free will to either turn to God or to turn to criminal activities. We have so many choices we can make at every situation. And what's important is every single one of us, we have the opportunity to spiritually grow. And this Maha Mantra that you are speaking about, it's a way of connecting with God that in any situation, anywhere, with anyone, God is accessible. You know, to go to a mandir or a temple or an ashram, you know, you have to go there and be there. But whether you're in a latrine or in a train or in a plane or driving in your car or at work or in an ashram or temple, God is always accessible through transcendental sound, Shabda Brahma. And it's the most accessible and powerful way of reconnecting in any situation. And we always have the choice to actually turn to God and connect with God through this sound vibration in any situation, whatever is happening with the astrology and whatever is happening with the world. Pandemic that we're facing now, you know, there's so much sorrow. People are suffering and dying, and economically people are in great strife, and we should feel compassion for people because we want people to be happy. But at the same time, it is an opportunity to reorient our priorities in life and focus on what really is most important in our life. And it's a beautiful opportunity to look within, to look to the wisdom of the great sages and the rishis and the avatars of what they have all come to give us over the ages. They've come to give us the opening of a door within our own minds and hearts to Ananda, to the love, to the peace that we're all looking for. And we can share that peace by living, you know, with character and compassion. I hope that answers your question, Prakash.
Yeah, but you see, earlier you told me that we should bring an understanding and transformation on your life. You told this to my brother. Now, why the world leaders and world problems which are going on between them, take Democratic Republic, take Congress, BJP, take other parties in the world, they have a lot of indifferences going on. And a lot of people have been conveying the messages like Prabhupada did and many other saints are doing, monks are doing, but they are not able to reach to any conclusion. That means the planetary is playing the role which is bringing them different between the two parties and not bringing peace in the world. That's my way of putting things. So how would you solve this problem in the world?
In that disparity, we have the opportunity to understand the need to go deeper into the subject. You know, when things are just going very nicely, our tendency is to be content with the superficial ways things are going. But when there's a crisis, then we're either sucked into the crisis, which brings out the worst in us, or we actually look deeper into the crisis of where I really want to be going and where I really want to help the world to be going. So, you know, there's different political parties, there's different religions, there's different races, there's so many different diversities in this world. To disagree on the basis of ideologies and to disagree according to our own natures is natural. But what is important is we have to be united on a higher principle, even with our disagreements. In politics, we may have very strong ideological differences, but at the same time, we're all representing the people. We're all here to serve the people. So our ideological differences should not make people suffer more. Our ideological differences should be harmonized in a way that ultimately, whether we agree or don't agree, we have to do what's best for the people. We are...
The sound is gone.
Is the sound here now?
Now it's come back, yes.
So unity in diversity is the principle we're speaking about. Unity in diversity, that we are united with respect for each other and respect for the common cause that we all have, even with our differences. And that same principle can be applied to religion. You know, within a particular religion, there's always so many different, there's people who believe in modernizing, there's people who believe in keeping things very, very traditional in the ancient ways, and then there's various religions within religions. But the principle is to help each other to live with character and to love God. And even if we have differences, we have to see the higher principle that unites us. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a story of Draupadi and Bhima. Aswatthama killed the children of Draupadi. And Arjuna caught Aswatthama. And Bhima, who's a great warrior and the elder brother of Arjuna, he said, kill that man. And Draupadi, who's the wife of Arjuna, the mother of all the children, and the wife of Bhima, she said, no, let him go, because he's the only child and his mother will suffer. So here's two great devotees, Draupadi and Bhima, and one is saying, let him go, and one is saying, kill him. So who's right? One is thinking from the perspective of a mother, and one is thinking from a perspective of a warrior. And Arjuna, with the help of Krishna, learned how to accommodate a higher principle wherein they were both satisfied. So even among great souls, there are apparent disagreements, but among great souls, there's a higher principle that we're united on. And this is very important, this idea of unity and diversity. The more we understand the unity of our purpose and our cause to love God and to actually be instruments of compassion to people, to help them overcome suffering and be happy, the more we understand the unity we have on that, the more we can respect the diversity of our different experiences and different opinions and different ideologies. The different religions of the world, the more we understand the unity among them, the more beautiful and wonderful each one actually is.
Great.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So we'll go deep into it next time when I meet with you in Mumbai or in London.
That is my hope and prayer. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you,
Dad. Dad, I know you wanted to ask something, and then we have lots of questions coming from...
GP has come. You have any questions, GP? Unmute.
I would suggest to justify the audience and the participants who are there, we should give them the opportunity to put questions.
Yeah, I was just saying that we have lots of questions come in, so I'd like to jump in there. But
I would just request Maharaji that in the conclusion, he should give them just 1 minute the way forward in life so that they can face all the problems which come. And with Maharaji's blessings, they all get comfort.
Thank you. Dad, you wanted to ask something?
Your audience. Please, questions from the audience.
Yeah, there are lots of questions from the
audience. Yeah, please. Please take over.
Could I come back in just yes. a few seconds?
Yes.
Please.
Thank you very much.
Satya?
Yes.
Satya?
Yes.
In the meantime, keep on chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Actually, we have this. It's a perfect time to do this, actually. So I'm going to share screen. The sound of the river was a symphony that released me from the shackles of my thoughts. From the river's song emerged thousands of celestial voices, all chanting in unison the sacred syllable Om. The sound captured the mind. Then something ascended from the depths of Mother Ganges' heart. The choir of thousand celestial voices sang a slow, entrancing song that seemed to reverberate throughout the valley. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Through the song of the river, I felt God whispered this beautiful mantra into my ears. Read from an excerpt of His Holiness's Journey Home from the banks of the Ganges in Rishikesh. Welcome back, Maharaj. Took the liberty of going deeper into your journey.
Thank you.
There are lots of questions, Maharaj, so I'm going to try and condense them by topic. The first question is, how can we be motivated with our goals in long term, and how can we control our mind?
The science of self-realization, or yoga, or dharma, is very much making priorities in our life. And there are four principles which help us to navigate our way forward in life in the direction that we really want to go. One is satsang, to regularly be with people who enlighten us, who inspire us, who nourish our faith, who nourish our enthusiasm for goodness and godliness. Satsang is so very important. It's foundational to our spiritual journey, because there are so many influences, many negative influences, many very distracting influences all around us. So we need to have a foundational focus, and being with like-minded spiritual people, being with saintly or enlightened people, help us to actually develop faith and direction in our life. Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Sastra Khoi, Lava Matra, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Hoi. This beautiful verse tells that there is nothing more precious than to be in the company of sadhu. And sadhu is not just the way a person dresses. Sadhu is one who is living with dharmic principles, who's living in a mood of devotion. And That association is very important. Just like today, we are all gathered together to remind each other and to enrich each other in higher spiritual purposes in our life. And then there's sadhana. Each day, putting some very quality time aside to do our spiritual practice, to tune us in to the frequency of grace and compassion and love that's within us, all around us. It's so important. We get faith and we get enthusiasm in the company of saintly people, and then we have a spiritual practice where through our meditation, prayer, sincere puja, through chanting of God's names or mantras, whatever that practice may be, we do it sincerely and we give quality priority time to that every day. In this way, just like in life, however much expectations and pressures we have in our occupation or in our family, we have to eat and we have to sleep to have the strength to do it properly. So similarly, spiritually, we need rest and we need nourishment. And being with holy people and having a spiritual practice in our own homes actually is spiritual nourishment, which gives us rest and strength in which we can go into the world and perform our duties in a way that is truly yoga. Yoga means we perform our activities in a way that's in harmony with the Supreme. And that means sadachar. With the spiritual strength and nourishment we get, we live with character. And ultimately, the highest character is seva. To actually feel that this whole creation is God's, sarva loka maheshwaram. This whole creation belongs to Krishna or to the Supreme Being. And I am a caretaker. Whatever intelligence I have, whatever wealth I have, whatever resources I have, whatever people I have influence over, I'm a caretaker of God's sacred children and God's sacred property. And I live in such a way, I perform my duties in such a way that we can bring happiness, bring enlightenment to the world.
Thank you, Maharaj. There's a question from Srikant who says, Pranam Swamiji, karma when performed unconditionally is not really accepted in a good sense in the materialistic world. How can we deal with this?
Can you say again? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I couldn't hear. Reception wasn't so good.
Karma, when performed unconditionally with the essence of bhakti, it's not really accepted with that sensibility in the world, in the materialistic world. So how do we maneuver through those intentions that are not really also receiving from the same intention as you're serving or you're sharing?
To understand better, are we inquiring about the misunderstanding that people have when we're trying to do unconditional seva?
Well, I think what I'm understanding from it is those that do perform karma unconditionally with that essence of bhakti receive a negative response because the opposite party doesn't receive it with that same intention. How can we deal with that? Like if we're coming with the frequency of bhav and service, but the opposition is not, how do we maneuver that? What decisions should we make? Because life is throwing situations at us that we have to accept in the moment?
Well, that question, you know, can be answered kaladesha patra, that according to the person, according to the place, according to the circumstance, you know, we understand how we could best make a positive difference. And communication is very important. And in many ways, part of communication is to try to understand how another person is seeing things and the experiences another person is having. The idea of paradukaduki is we try to put ourselves in the other person's situation so that we understand how we could best communicate with them. It's important to be relevant. You know, why is it that, you know, so many different religious scriptures are in different languages? You know, some are in Sanskrit, some are in Hebrew or Greek, some are in Arabic. There are many, some are in Hindi, but there are different scriptures in different languages. And essentially the message is the same, but still you have to speak the language that people understand at that time in that place. And so many of the rituals of religion, the differences are because they're in harmony with the culture of the particular time and place. But they have a common purpose. So it is important that each of us, if we really want to have unconditional bhakti or karma or seva, as you say, that we do it in a compassionate way that's understandable to a person as far as we can. It's relevant. We're trying to see how they're hearing what I'm saying, and we're trying to make it very clear in that way. And that's part of caring. That's part of compassion. And however well we care and we try our very, very best, still there's going to be situations where people just don't understand and they reject, or they think it's irrelevant, or they think it's unnecessary. And in that situation, we carry on. We carry on. We don't allow, you know, popular opinion or misunderstandings to distract us from a path of seva, of compassion.
Thank you, Maharaj.
It's like a little child or an adult, whatever. If a person needs some medical treatment, you know, some people resist it, and some people accept it, and we try our best to help because we care about the person. We're not just trying to conquer them by convincing them to take medical treatment. It's because we really care about them, and because we care about them, we'll try to explain it in such a way and try to present it so that they'll understand, and then we could actually help them.
Thank you so much for that clarity. The next question is from Priyarani, and she says, Hare Krishna, dear Maharaj, pranam. Srila Prabhupada mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita that whenever Krishna appears, he does a wholesale killing. In the light of current situations, with so many news of natural disasters, pandemic, political uprise, etc., every single day, can you please explain how should we process the current world situation?
Um, We can process according to the direction of Bhagavad Gita. Daivi yesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mame vamya prapadyante maya metta tarantite. That this material nature is ever changing, and in so many situations, it's just beyond our control. But one thing is within our control. We can take shelter of the Lord with humility, with sincerity. And, you know, through satsang, through sadhana, and through the very way we live, we learn to take shelter of the Lord. And in that shelter, we actually, within our own hearts, we feel the transcendence that's above and beyond all the changes of this world. And we can actually be an instrument of that love and that compassion in what we speak and what we do within the world. So we're not the controllers. First, we have a little bit of control for a little bit of time over little things. Now, for a little ant, you know, one ant who's able to lift up something very big may be considered the most supernatural hero among ants. But for a human being looking down at an ant, you know, it doesn't really make any difference whether you could lift, you know, a stone or a particle of sugar. In the same way, you know, from the perspective of truth, you know, we're all in this world for just a small amount of time. And we all have certain resources that we have some control over. But ultimately, by the power of time, everything comes out of our control. So we're not the controllers. We're caretakers of divine property. And to live with that spirit in whatever situation we're in, you know, we could always be growing, and we could always help others to grow.
The next question is, who is responsible for creating and spreading coronavirus? Is it God or?
It is the interaction between humanity and Mother Nature. You know, humanity, depending on how we deal with Mother Nature, there's various reactions to that. and that's the cause. And ultimately, Sarva Karana Karanam, God is the one who created Mother Nature, and God is the one who created humanity and all living beings. And God has created also the free will within humanity. So Krishna allows the interaction between each and every one of us and the collective humanity to interact with Mother Nature, with natural resources, and there will be reactions. That's inevitable. But yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam dharmasya tadatmanam srijami aham. Krishna doesn't interfere with the actions and reactions that humanity creates within this material existence, but Krishna comes again and again and again and gives us sages and saints and scriptures to actually teach us how to live in harmony with nature, and how to live in harmony with each other, and how to live in harmony with his love. And that's his greatness, that, you know, Krishna has come into this world in many forms, with many names, to give us dharma. And throughout all of the ways that we're interacting with nature and interacting with each other, Krishna never gives up on us. always within our hearts, always speaking to us through from within, if we become receptive, through scriptures, through saints, through nature, if we just connect to nature in that way. So that is how Krishna intervenes. And Krishna can intervene in many other ways too. But right now, this pandemic and other situations like this, it's caused by the interaction between humanity and Mother Nature. And we need to really be responsible in preventing such situations and in responding when they do come. And God gives us all the tools in which we can do that. Does that answer the question?
Definitely does.
Satya, I think Maharaji may be getting late. So would you like to take to the conclusion?
Yes. Yes. Maharaj, this is the last question. We are our happiest when we are young. We're filled with the joy of discovery, of creation. As we age, we gain in wisdom, but lose this spontaneity for joy and wonder. How can we retain and maintain this child in us, even as we age? And in that process of childlike relationship with the divine, with God, as you so beautifully explain, how can we find that commitment? Because when you found that first photograph of Lord Krishna, you weren't committed then. It was just the first symbol that came to you. And then your whole journey through India was sending messages of chants and little silent voices and little notes, but you only committed towards the end when your heart and your mind completely united. And I think most people's questions is about the heart and the mind not uniting. And that's why this is the last one, to how do we keep that inner child alive so that that heart and mind doesn't come in the way and it actually unifies.
Thank you. Innocence is something that is so precious. But as we grow, there's actually a price to preserve or restore that innocence. The company we keep is very important. You know, to be with people who help us to value those pure, innocent purposes of our life, to help us to actually see the incredible excitement and adventure of living in this world. To fill us with these positive thoughts of the opportunities, because actually the world, life could be seen as a treacherous, begrudging way of just surviving day after day, or it can be really an adventure into something sublime, into a wonderful reality. And for that, again, it's important that we tune into that innocent, pure self that's within us, and also to be with people who bring us nearer to our true self. So it's important that we're with positive people, and we read positive things, and we put time aside for that positive cultivation of our own true, ever youthful nature. And if we choose to do that, then innocence, compassion, and love can be realized in our life, even in the face of apparent suffering and death, we could find joy and give joy to others. And what is more beautiful in life than that? And what is a greater motivational force in our education and our career than to give compassion and love through what we're doing, directly or indirectly? Life is inherently beautiful, despite all the external situations that come to us.
Thank you so much, Maharaj, for that beautiful time that we've shared with you, for your presence, your kindness, your warmth, your love. And unfortunately, we couldn't answer all questions from all the people that were writing, so sorry to them. But thank you again for joining us from Chicago. And we hope to see you very soon in person. And hopefully spend time with you at Eco Village very soon.
But thank you, and thank you, Gopi Chanji, and Prakashji, and Ashokji, and all of your family. I'm so grateful that we
can
this time to...
And can we, Maharaji, can we conclude with Mahamantra, with George Harrison's Hare
yes.
Krishna, Hare Krishna, so that without the mantra, we should not conclude this program.
So perfect. So perfect.
Satya.
Satya. Everything I've been trying to say in the last 1.5 hours, you have just said it in a few seconds. Thank you so very much.
Thank you all, friends, for listening, for being here with us. And Ashish, you may play the mantra. I'm not sure. Is he playing it? Let me see if I can play it. Oops, sorry.
There's no sound.
Oh.
Yes. Satya, volume.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Thank you.
Maharaji, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Namaskar and pranam.
My love and my prayers to all of your families.
Maharaj, lots of love coming from a lot of people on messaging, saying thank you so much. It was so uniting and heartfelt. Thank you.
Thank you. And I pray to Sri Radharani and Sri Krishna to shower their blessings and their mercy and their grace upon your whole family.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Knowing that the Hinduja family is here in this world, engaging in so many beautiful devotional, compassionate activities, gives so much hope and so much joy to my heart. Thank you so very much to each and every one of you.
Thank you. Your blessings.
And Satya, thank you for bringing all of us together in this special way.
It's all your magic, Maharaj, from when we first met.
It is Krishna's magic.
Krishna's magic through you, through us. We're all trying to be the servant of the servant of the servant. So thank you.
That is how magic happens when we are in this mood. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day. Thank you so much. Thank you all friends for joining us from everywhere in the world. And sorry for the first half of the first
few minutes
of the conversation. We will be sharing the recorded, corrected link on the video later, so you can catch that. And thank you all so much for joining us.
Jaya Sita Ram, Sita Ram, Jaya Sita Ram. Sita Ram.